your character in Mission Impossible 3. I love the interactions with him on the phone and so forth. And I was just wondering if you expected this relatively smallish role to have actually been expanded to a film. And what was your reaction when you got the call?
We had JJ and me joked about it on set of the third one, or on set of Star Trek, I think we were talking about. Let's do another Mission Impossible and have Benji be a field agent. But it was always like a bit of a pipe dream and a sort of silly distraction. And then one morning I got an email saying, you know, what if Benji passed the field exam? And classic JJ, he emails the most important things in like really quick, short. Like, do you want to play Scotty? Is the one I remember the most. And the mission was on, and all of a sudden there was a script, and we were in Prague, and it was great, and it was lovely. I had the idea that, you know, Benji had sat back down at his desk in the lab after being Ethan's personal GPS in Shanghai, and just thought, this is boring, you know. Decided to go, I'm going to do something a bit more hands on here, and went and took the field exam and became an agent, you know. And we joined him in this film. It's probably like his second mission,
right?
I think the first one we see him on. You know, he's getting to work. I mean, I kind of saw it as Benji working with Ethan. It's like me working with Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
It was like, wow. So that was how I approached it.
Fantastic. And coming straight off that, I mean, you've famously parodied action films in the past. Is there still a sense of awe coming to a massive franchise like this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was, I mean, more so on the first one. Coming to this one, I felt like an old hand because I'd done the third film, and yeah. Paula and Jeremy were like, you know, new. They were new kids. I was like, I've done a mission before. But then you work with people like Brad Bird, and even Tom, you know, who's like a massive movie star, but essentially is still just a guy who's making movies and takes it very seriously. And, you know, he doesn't like float on set, and everything that you read and hear about him is not true. You know, he's just a person. When you get into the thick of it, it's just filmmaking, and it's a lot of fun. And we had a lot of the four of us. You know, the film's kind of, I joke with Brad about saying, "Oh, you finally made The Incredibles 2," because it's like you've got Tom is Mr. Incredible, Paul is the mom, I'm Dash, and Jeremy's the girl. Think of the one with the issues, you know. Thank you. So you don't sort of you just make an adjustment, you know. You're okay, I'm here now, and this is the way it's going to be. So I'm going to stop being all wired by it and just get on with the work. That's how you get it done.
Cool. The scene I loved was when you're heading into the Kremlin with Tom Cruise. How much of that was actually written and ad-libbed, where you were very nervously talking about everything?
It was a little bit improv. Josh and Andre, who wrote the script, said to me very early on that they wanted me to make the role my own and to bring a lot to it. That's not to say that it wasn't already all there on the page, which it was, because I was like, well, I don't want to do it for the sake of it. You know, you've written a really fun character here. But, you know, being British and Benji being British as well, I got to add a little bit of the sort of minutiae of the lines. And, yeah, that bit. I remember Brad, that was my first scene, and Brad kept coming up and saying, it's like you're a kettle, and the lid's just going like that, and just letting a little bit of steam. You know, that was Brad's directorial contribution to that scene, and all that stuff about, I'm dense, that was all kind of made up on the spot. But it was great fun, because it was like he was excited. He's going into the most dangerous mission you could possibly imagine, but he's kind of excited because he's working with Ethan Hunt, you know. It's a big moment. So a lot of that stuff. I love that scene. That scene in the Kremlin when Benji suddenly starts talking about Ethan's wife. And it's hilarious because Ethan kind of is like, what the fuck? You know, you see him like, what are you doing? Well, he actually throws Ethan because he starts talking about his missus. And, oh, that's really sweet, because it's about the people, you know. It's about the human beings. They're not Superman, you know. Even Ethan's not a Superman. They've all got feelings, and they get scared, and you know, Benji starts to waffle when he's tense. So I got to do a lot of that, which was great.
You touched briefly upon working with Tom Cruise and the personality, but I want to talk about him as an actor, especially a very intense actor, goes really into his roles, working along with someone like that. What's that experience like?
It's great, because he sets the bar, you know, and you have to match it, otherwise you're not going to appear on the screen. He's so frighteningly charismatic and so dedicated to what he does. You know, you just get left behind if you don't, you know, hit maximum Cruise levels. So he just brings out the best in everybody, and that's not just us as actors, it's the crew as well. He's great to work with because he just inspires everybody, and he's also extremely approachable and loads of fun. There's no weirdness around him, you know. It's not like, oh, here comes Tom, you know. It's just like he's a really good guy. Sounds really naff. He's a great guy, but he is. He's great fun. We had a lot. We had a good laugh on this film. Me and the four of us. There was one scene we had to shoot 3 times because we failed because of laughing. It was a scene where Tom had to do a really important speech about the world was going to end, and we just couldn't do it. We had to leave. We were ejected from the set, and then we got told to leave the studio because Tom had to do it on his own, looking at blank space, because me and Jeremy and Paula couldn't hold it together. Then Tom was doing it on the set and could just hear us outside going. So there was room for fun, but at the same time, you know, when we were actually trying to get it done, it was 100%, and that was because Tom made sure it was that way. And he never pushed his way around. It wasn't like, you must perform like this. Everyone just wanted to, you know, mm-hmm. because otherwise you're not fit to be there. So
cool. Thank you.
Speaking of fun and laughter, yeah. You've worked a lot with Nick Frost before in the past. Yeah. Did you try to get him a role on Mission Impossible?
No, I mean, we don't.
Are you trying to get one for Star Trek?
No, not at all. We don't come as a pair, you know. I mean, we do a lot of work together because we're best mates and we like working together. And because we're family men now and have lives in different parts of London, making films is the only way we can seriously hang out for any length of time. So, but no, we want to have separate careers. We don't want to always be seen as a double act. And I think it would suddenly change things if Nick was in, say, Star Trek or Mission Impossible, because people would be like, oh, it's Nick Frost. And then they'd forget that it was supposed to be Scotty or Benji or whatever. So, you know, I was really... And also, I like when Nick does his own thing. I loved him in Attack the Block because I wasn't in it. You know, it was great fun to just see him be him, because I'm his biggest fan as well as his best friend. So, you know, there was some talk of him playing Harry Mudd in Star Trek. that was like internet speculation. That was no serious, which would be enormous fun. But, you know, any chance I get to work with Nick, I grab. And, you know, we're going to be working together again next year on with Edgar as well, on our third installment of those films. So I'll just have to wait till then.
Yeah, awesome. Fantastic.
What was the experience or the difference working with a team with J.J. Abrams and Brad Bird versus Spielberg and Peter Jackson?
Well,
what
really,
direction did you follow with that?
It was very interesting. I found myself in a really fascinating situation with both those films, Tintin and Mission Impossible, because with Mission Impossible I was working with a renowned animation director with his first foray into live action, and then with Tintin it was a very renowned live action director with his first foray into animation. So I was witnessing two very accomplished directors out of their comfort zone and almost learning a new way of working, and that was really fascinating because both of them took to it immediately, but both of them had this really sort of immense energized enthusiasm for what they were doing, because they were kind of working with new technology. And it was like, Brad was fascinated because people kept coming and patting our faces with makeup puffs, and he couldn't understand why he couldn't film, because why do they need all this stuff done to them? He used to call them fluffers. Why are the fluffers here? You know, because he's used to them people being animated and not being real. And Stephen would always suddenly be looking, going, oh man, I can shoot from under the ground and I don't have to dig a hole. This is amazing. So that was it was as a film fan, as a fan of the process, it was brilliant to be up close and personal watching two of my favourite directors, almost like learning to walk again. You know, it was fantastic.
Great. Now moving to Tintin now, going back here. Yeah, the experience to work with the motion capture technology, how was for you that part, working with that, and if you're getting advice for something, experience like Andy Serkis on that?
Yeah, we did. You know, obviously Andy is like, you know, the Yoda of motion capture.
Yeah.
He's like, he has his own, me and Nick, he's a joke that he's got his own kind of personalised helmet in a glass case that he brings out for every film. But no, it's a process you have to learn. You have to project yourself somewhere between theatrical and film acting. You have to be slightly bigger than you would if you were doing just live action, but not as big as theatrical. And you draw on a very childish sort of sense of play. You know, you when you're a kid and you're playing spaceman or pirates or whatever, you don't have props or costumes or makeup. You just imagine it all. So with Performance Capture, because you're wearing the suit, and this might all change soon, you might not need the suit. I foresee a time when you're literally just wear the costumes that, or even just your normal clothes, you know. But the moment you wear this one piece suit, and you have to just really draw on your own imagination to summon the performances. And then, you know, we get a lot of credit for what you see on screen, but really it's the animators. What we provide them with is a template. Mm-hmm. We give them the voice and the motion, you know, the performance, and they build on top of that what you see on the screen. We did my job on Tintin was completed by the beginning of 2009, and in the ensuing 3 years, the animators mm-hmm. made what you see on the screen, which is this incredibly lavish, beautiful thing, you know. So, and it was 30 days for me and Nick, if that. And it's the animators that really do the work. You know, Brad actually, as an animator, we had a long conversation about this in Dubai about how he kind of gets frustrated when the actors get all the credit for performance capture, and it's not. It's a collaboration between the actors and the animators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's working with all these good directors at the moment, and then particularly your background with Edgar, like with Spaced and Sean. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to know if you had any advice for aspiring filmmakers or writers out there.
I think just the only thing you can do is get out and do it. I mean, now is a really good time because suddenly filmmakers, with the internet, filmmakers have a platform to immediately get their work seen, you know. When I look at Edgar and Peter Jackson, Steven Spielberg, all those guys have something in common in that they basically just went out and did it when they were very young, you know. And JJ, most directors would have started making little homemade movies and stuff and cut their teeth and learnt their craft, you know, before they went to film school or whatever. So I would say the best way to train to be a writer or a film is to do it on the job, is to get out there and make your films, you know, scrabble together the money. Don't be put off, don't be deterred by lack of finance or whatever. You just have to get out there and do it and get yourself seen, because if you are good, then that quality will out. Someone will spot that video on YouTube and it will be watched and watched and watched. You know, it's a good time for filmmakers, I think.
Sure, thanks.
There's a lot of support for Andy Serkis's role in Rise of the Planet of the Apes for some type of awards consideration.
Yes.
Having yourself been part of the mocap experience, do you think that actors in motion capture performances should be nominated for awards of the variety of academies or factors and such?
Yeah, it's a difficult one because I think so. The animation aspect of it could be seen as in the same way as, you know, makeup or costume, mm-hmm. and a way that other people can augment a performance, you know.
Like a Lon Chaney back piece of the window.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he did a lot of that himself as well, so he should have had, like, a joint Oscar. Mm-hmm. Maybe there has to be a new category involved. I think Andy, I could see Andy in that performance. You know, when I saw that movie, there were times when I could really, really see Andy, and I definitely think that performance capture performances should be considered in terms of being a live action performance. But it's a difficult one because to quote Annie Hall, I don't think a set of aesthetic criteria has emerged yet. it's a difficult one, I think, because it in some respects giving the actor an award slightly detracts from the work that the animators did afterwards as well, because I think they're also responsible, you know. And there are things that the animators can bring to the performance that the actor can't, you know. And there's no doubt in my mind that Andy Serkis is an Oscar-worthy actor. He's an amazing actor, and he's an amazing performance capture actor as well. But I think there's also work that goes along with his performance that somehow would seem backgrounded if he was solely commended for it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would love Andy Serkis to get an actor, but I think people need to understand to get an Oscar. But I think we need to understand the process more. I say that as someone who's done it, mm-hmm. and I don't entirely understand it.
Mm-hmm. Cool. You touched on before that you're working with Nick and Edgar again on the third film in your Blood and Ice Cream.
Yeah.
Sort of trilogy. Where's that at? I read on Twitter that there were some internet complications that was delaying things or something.
No, we've written it. We've written the first draft of it, and now we're trying to write the second draft. But Edgar's in LA, and I'm in Hertfordshire in the UK. And because BT didn't set my internet up when they promised they would, me and Edgar couldn't Skype and carry on with our second draft. So I was just angry at BT and decided to blame the hold-up in writing. I'm very excited. I cannot wait to start shooting this movie, which we really will hopefully do sometime next year after I complete Star Trek. It's very much the culmination of the first two films. It will make those series of films a trilogy. You know, I mean, Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead are related in so much as the personnel involved and a few kind of little in jokes as well. But really, they're very different films. Whereas World's End is like the answer to the equation: Shaun times Hot Fuzz, right. and it seals it as a three-part film series. And it's going to be really good. I think I'm very, 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 very pleased with it. It took shape. We wrote it quite fast compared to Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz because it just came so easy. I think because we have this language now with each other, you know. But it was really fun to write with Edgar again, and we're dead excited about this film. It's going to be awesome, I think.
Cool. Look, having made love letters to Steven Spielberg before, I guess, in things like Paul, having now worked with Steven Spielberg, is that the accumulation of a dream? And and is there anyone you particularly like to...
Oh, he's such a bully, that man. It totally is. I grew up with Steven Spielberg, but not literally. I grew up watching his films, and I remember having seen Raiders and going home and explaining to my mum the fact that the Nazis melted and all this kind of stuff. And then, you know, 30 years later, he's calling my house and where my mum is, and she can hear his voice coming out. So that the circularity of that is not lost on me at all, you know, to finally work with the man who inspired me, to inspire my love of film to a huge degree was great. And to have him be in our film, you know, was just, mm-hmm. I mean, it just doesn't get any better than that. And you know, he is a lovely, lovely man. And I really want to work with him again. And in a live action capacity, hopefully, that would be lovely. But there are plenty of people I'd love to work with, the Coen brothers, and there are lots of great actors and directors and writers out there that I'd love to work with. I just want to work with good people. I want to work with people who respect film as awfully pretentious, but as an art form. You know, it's something that's not just fireworks. Yeah. Just this film is a great example of that. You know, it is a big wham bam, fun actioneer, but at the same time, you know, there's a real human story at the heart of it. It's about a family who can't get on with each other. You know, that's more important than the threat from Michael Nyquist's character. You know, that's almost like a background detail. The threat of global annihilation is an exacerbation to their, whatever that means, is an exacerbation to their own problems, which is just trying to get on with each other. You know, so
Well, what a fun time you've had over the last few years.
Yeah.
So you've created and starred in your own film hits with Shaun and Hot Fuzz. You've done a couple of huge franchise films with the Mission Impossible films. You've taken a couple iconic roles, one in Star Trek and of course in now in Tintin. If you could get in a time machine, shoot back to the set of Spaced, what advice would you give yourself?
Don't freak out. I wrote a book almost entirely about this, about the whole idea of having a time machine where I could go back, you know, to that kid that had just seen Raiders and say, one day you're going to work with that guy, or that guy will, you know, you would be showing pictures of your baby to him. I sent a picture of my daughter was born. I sent him a picture of her because she'd been like a sonogram picture when we were shooting Tintin. And he said, oh, let me show me a picture when she's born. And he sent me an email back saying, she looks like the star child at the end of 2001. I thought, of course he's going to say that. That's like, of course, if Steven Spielberg was going to compare a baby to anything, it's going to be a Kubrick film. the idea of... And the classic one, of course, is in one episode of Spaced, I say that every odd-numbered Star Trek movie is shit, and then I went on to be in Star Trek 11, which is just hilarious.
I feel like, broke the rule.
Yeah, exactly. I broke the rule, hopefully, gladly. It's amazing to me, and the ironies are never lost on me. You know, I never kind of like just take them in my stride. I always spend some time giggling about it. And not least on Tintin, Nick Frost and I. Nick similarly is a big fan of Stevens, and you know, we'd have these very studious conversations with him about filmmaking, and then go outside and jump up and down and scream where he couldn't sort of hear us. But you know, I'd like to think that I haven't won a competition, though. You know, I've done it because I've worked hard and I care about what I do, and hopefully I'm good at what I do, and hopefully I deserve to be in these situations. It's not just because I somehow lucked out, you know. You know, I want to keep on the same track, and I care about things. I've seen a few films recently and just thought, you know, that's what it's all about. I saw this and was so pleased with the outcome. And I saw Tyrannosaur, Paddy Considine's film, which is a very hard watch, but it's a beautifully brilliant film. And thought, you know, we need to hang on to cinema as an art. It can't just become mashed up with television and, you know, just be something that's disposable. It can't all just be Transformers, you know. It can't be these light shows that you just forget the next day. And there is a place for big films. They aren't just disposable. They can be worthy, you know. Mm-hmm. I think this is a great example. And Tintin, you know. We need to keep it as a... this is jet lag talking now. And another thing. I hate everybody.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations, Ben.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.